A few weeks ago, we had the distinct honor and pleasure in this community to have a Shabbaton with Rabbi Stuhlberger, Rabbi Wiener, and their Talmidim. And at that time, I mentioned that even though Kinai Nahara hopefully will continue, I've known Rabbi Stuhlberger for a number of years, I am constantly amazed how he has the ability to influence so many people, especially the Talmidim and Talmidos in his institutions. And I think besides the many talents that he has, I think the salient ingredient, which there are many talented people, but the most important ingredient that Rabbi Stuhlberger has is his tremendous Avas Yisrael. I think every Talmud, every Talmida, every student in any of his many institutions genuinely feels that he loves them. And I think that that's why he's so successful. Of course, he learned that, I think, from our Rosh Yeshiva Zecher Tzaddik Livracha and our Rabbeim. But to see it and to demonstrate and live it is two different things. And I know it not only from my experience of knowing him in yeshiva and being his employee and being, I hope to say, a friend, but also, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, as a satisfied customer. Kinai Nahara Avrami and Chaim Shalom and Al Kovi all attend institutions which Rabbi Stuhlberger heads. And as I mentioned, if there would be a JD Power survey for high schools and yeshivas, Rabbi Stuhlberger's institutions would definitely be on the top of satisfaction. And again, I think it's really because of his tremendous Avas Yisrael. And therefore, on a day like today, when, as we heard in the other videos, we focus on, instead of Lashon Hara and the other things, we try to focus on the opposite, and the Avas Yisrael, and the way to build those building blocks which will keep us away from Lashon Hara and Sinas Chinam and all those terrible forces. So we need guidance and direction how to develop those relationships, how to get there, to really have the unconditional Avas Yisrael, which we're expected to have. I could think of no person better to give us the building blocks and the direction and how to do it more than Rabbi Stuhlberger. So it's really my pleasure and honor to present Harav Stuhlberger.
Since we're trying to build on Avas Yisrael, I won't tell you how upset I am at you with that introduction, but it's truly a pleasure to be here, and I really admire the people who can Baruch Hashem on a tinus. It's incredible. It's difficult enough, but to be able to sit and to constantly hear Divrei Torah and Divrei Soros, it's really a tribute to all of you, and Baruch Hashem, we should be matziach in what this day represents. It's a unique opportunity that we have. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has sort of given us this chance through this day of Tisha B'Av to focus on so many of the absolute essential aspects of our condition, and to realize that focusing on, while it brings us tears and brings us to emotions, brings us to sadness, we need to recognize, and obviously we do, but the fact that we're here, that those tears are tears that are the building blocks for the future. Those tears, the focus on the past and the recognition of what we don't have, is the essential quality of what we have to put together, what we have to create, so that we could have what we ultimately are longing for. And that, of course, is Mashiach, the Beis Hamikdash, the Hizgalus HaShechina, Kavod Shemayim, what this world is supposed to be all about. So the opportunity to maybe focus on some of the issues, as Rabbi Summers alluded to, it's a wonderful schus, especially to such a choshev olam and such a choshev based knesses. But I think, like all aspects of Avodas Hashem, there's a positive and a negative. Yes, we're going to try to talk about the building blocks, but it is, I think, impossible to talk about the building blocks of how you build Avas Yisrael without a little bit focusing, or maybe very much focusing, on some of the implications of lacking Avas Yisrael. we don't know how critical Avos Yisrael is, it's hard for us to really get mobilized into working on ourselves and realizing what do I have to do to build this person that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to become, this Avram Avinu, this Suri Meinu of our generation. Because we all have that same particular mandate. It isn't unique to a particular individuals, particular people. It wasn't unique to Avram and Sarah. They were fulfilling what they saw as their personal obligations based on their recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When they fully understood what HaKadosh Baruch Hu represents and what the message is and what he does here in this world and what he shows us of himself in this world, it's about chesed. It's about love, and it's about unconditional love, and it's about caring, and it's about giving. So it's really our personal mandate, each and every one of us in our own levels. So what we have to do, I believe, first and foremost, is stop for a minute and start looking at Chazal and just try to internalize some of the messages of what really transpires. And maybe it's Pashut, but as we know from Sils Hasharim, I'm not going to apologize for saying things that are simple, because we have to reinforce simple things as well. And we have to be reminded of them. And if we stop and we contemplate where we are and what we have suffered from the absence of Avos Yisrael, you know, everyone of course knows the Gemara. We are suffering in this long galus. There are a number of daunting aspects to it. There's one maybe side point I think we have to recognize in terms of dealing with midos, because sometimes I think we're living in a world where we talk about Bid Adam Lamaka, we can get into a little bit more. Bid Adam Lachaver is a tougher thing to get into. I once heard a beautiful pshat. Klal Yisrael was guilty of the three greatest averus in the history of the world, and in our Torah, the three worst averus a person can transgress: gila, ra'ayish, shficha, adam, avodah zarah, idolatry, and murder, were actually perpetrated by the people of the first of the Churban Bayis Rishon. The people who lived during the destruction of the first temple actually committed those averus. 70 years later, after the destruction, they're back in their Beis Hamikdash. The second Beis Hamikdash destroyed because of sin haschinam, an expression that we hear so often, because of this blind hatred. Well, maybe I'll just try to elaborate on a little bit more, but the Beis Hamikdash gets destroyed, the second temple, because of blind hatred, and 2,000 years later we're still waiting. And we read this morning all of that Golus, what that Golus represented, and all of its horror, and all of its bloodshed, and all of its torture, and we're still suffering. What's pshat? The three biggest averus, 70 years and sinas chinam, 2,000 years? Now we can certainly argue about the answers, and I'm sure there's more than one. But I heard one very beautiful answer is because when a person transgresses gila raya, shvich hazom and avodah zarah, there's just no mistake about it. You know what you did wrong. And when the results of your action hits you right in the face, this is where you are, and this is what you've done, and this is what the repercussions are, oh my gosh, we wake up and we say, I gotta change. It's very easy to turn around and look at those averus and say, I got to stop doing them. They're horrific. They represent the greatest level of rebelliousness against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you start talking about sinas chinam, if I were to ask, if you go to a random crowd of Jewish people, say, please, anybody doesn't have Avos Yisrael, please raise your hand. Anybody who's not a good person, who's not a mensch, who's not a nice individual, please raise your hand. I mean, who would raise your hand? When it comes to midos, it's very hard, because we tend to look ourselves in the mirror and we say, you know what, maybe I'm a little bit lacking here, but I'm a pretty nice guy, and I'm okay, and I'm a pretty nice lady. I do a lot of that. So, and it's not that we're not nice. We could very well be very nice, but apparently to recognize what's really needs to be recognized on internally of where the improvement needs to be in each and every one of us. This is, again, it's not about looking at somebody else. You know, we're very quick to point the finger. Yeah, if you'd be better, you know, think this is all about really. I'm talking to myself, and then I'm just sharing how we have to look at each and every one of us, not to look at somebody else, but really internally, and say, what can I do to improve? So it's not easy, because we tend to deflect when it comes, especially when it comes to issues of character, when it comes to issue of, am I a good person? Am I a giving person? Am I a loving person? Well, certainly we all like to put ourselves in that category, but nevertheless, obviously, there's still room for improvement. And just if we stop for a second and we look at some of the points Reb Chaim Shalevitz, in one of his pieces, goes through the power of richuk, you know, the power of distancing somebody, pushing somebody away. Because again, we can be very, very nice, and you know, I'll I'll share with you a story. This is a story. Normally, Rabbi Pesach Kron ends his drusha with this story. And I'm not here to argue with Rabbi Kron, but I'm going to begin a little bit because, to me, it's only the beginning of the story. But then I'll say very quickly, because I'm sure we've all heard this story, but we know the story about Sheila, who was a developmentally disabled young boy, a sweet bubalo who was watching a baseball game, and his father asked if he can play the game, and Sheila comes in at the bottom of the ninth inning, and he pinch hits in a very dramatic moment, and he couldn't hardly swing the bat, and one of his teammates comes and helps him swing the bat, and together Sheila and this boy, after the first strike, hit the ball, and they hit a dribbler to the pitcher, and everyone starts running, Sheila, run to first, and his awkward star Shield's running to first, and he's quelling, and this is his greatest moment, and the pitcher picks the ball up in a very tense, critical moment of a very tight, let's call it Lag BaOmer game, and he throws the ball over the first baseman's head. And everyone says, Sheila, run to second. And before you know it, Sheila and the right fielder throws the ball over the second baseman's head. And Sheila's running to third. He's running third. And by the time he finally gets home, and then Sheila, and everyone's screaming, Sheila, run home! Sheila, run home! He's about to make a home run! And not only are the people, by the time he hits home plate, not only are the people who are on Sheila's team carrying him to home celebrating, but even the opposite team was carrying Sheila and touching home plate and celebrating that Sheila hit a home run. And it's a beautiful story. And recently, there's actually another story similar in the Gentile world about a girls' softball team which somebody couldn't walk and they made a tremendous. It was really a beautiful act of a girl broke her leg literally between first and second, and the pitcher helped her get around the bases to get the home run. It was a very, very wonderful story, similar story. And I mention this now because the truth of the matter is, it's a beautiful story and it shows a lot of love. But there's something about the fact that there are certain people that are easier to love. And there are certain people that in a way, the ava or the chesed that we extend to them comes from a point of view of us saying, of a person saying, Baruch Hashem, I don't have these challenges. Baruch Hashem, I'm not handicapped. Baruch Hashem, I don't have this. Baruch Hashem, you know, and sometimes that motivates people to do tremendous chesed to people as a sense of hakara and a recognition and thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I found sometimes, and I see this every summer in a way, and I'm not Chas V'Shalom saying anything negative, these are amazing counselors, but I spend a month every single year next to the Chaverim, which is an amazing program in Camp Morganav, where they take these boys every single year, 15, 20, 25 of them, and they run a program for them, and they have counselors for them, and it was amazing to me. That these counselors, the Monsieur Snefer, these counselors have for these kids. 2 o'clock in the morning, they could be turning, cleaning sheets. They could be doing amazing things. And you say to yourself, you know, my gosh, like, you know, is this not the most amazing chesed in the world? This is the most amazing bachet. These people are on the merumah shel olam. They stand in the highest echelons of society, right? Well, they have, it's a tremendous chus. I'm not taking anything away from this chus. But it's amazing. I can see the exact same guy who was willing to change a sheet at 2:30 in the morning. And you just sort of, you know, walk by him and like, whatever, what are you doing? And like, when it comes to other areas, I don't see the same consistency. You know, I'm trying to figure out what's pshat here. And I think what the pshat is, and we can, you know, you can, everyone could add their own little kinach to it, but at the end of the day, there are certain types of chasam that we do that somehow, you know, we just feels, it makes us feel good. Or people that we associate, that we like, and we love helping them. It's those people that sometimes either are the most like us and our attitude is, why can't you be more like me? You just rub me the wrong way. I can't stand you. I don't like you. Because why? Because not because Chas V'Shalom you're in a wheelchair. Not because Chas V'Shalom you can't see, or because you have some other handicap or some other challenge in life that Baruch Hashem I'm glad I don't have. But it's because you don't have them, and why aren't you? Why don't you do what I want you to do? Why don't you act like I want you to act? Why aren't you more like me? When you're not like me and I'm happy that I'm not like you, well, then that's easy. But when you're like me, or I'm asking, why aren't you more like me, and you could be like me, then it starts getting tough. That's why very often, we can analyze again, why is it that sometimes family situations pose the greatest level of challenge for people in their midos? Because somehow, I don't know, maybe there's more of a tension point of, you know, that inability for somebody else to adapt the event. I want you to do this, so please do this. We're living in a world, as I mentioned before, the expression of kids at risk. I don't think it's kids at risk that we should call them. We really should lead the fight a little bit more closely. It's kids at rihuk. It's kids at a distance. And we need to realize that sometimes we can be nice to 99 out of 100 people. But that one person that somehow we have not brought in, not made have that person feel comfortable, not to have that person feel wanted, not have that person feel belonging. That's where the devastation could lie. And again, it's frightening because HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to hold us to a very high standard. When you think about what Klal Yisrael has done throughout the centuries and the amazing chesed that we've done, and yet these episodes stick out in history as such unbelievably significant, devastating moments in history. When Timnah, a woman who, Avraham Avinu, was he not the greatest Baal Chesed? Was Avraham Yitzchak not the most welcoming atmosphere you could possibly find in the history of Klal Yisrael? And for some reason, Timnah wanted to get into that mishpacha, and they would not let her in. And Avraham would not let her in, and Yitzchak would not let her in, Yaakov wouldn't let her in. And I'm sure on the surface, there were many, many acceptable justifications for why. But at the end of the day, Timnah felt rejected. And the Chazal somehow labeled that rejection as a basis for what ultimately resulted. Because if she says, she said, if I can't connect to Avraham or his family, I will connect to the closest thing to his family. If I can't get into Yitzchak's side or Yaakov's side, I'll go to the other side. And she goes to Esav's side. And she marries Eliphaz. And produces who? Amalek! From Timnah comes Amalek, from the Rechuk of a Timnah, who certainly, if they were to explain the reasoning on paper, how could it be? I'll explain. Avraham Avinu wouldn't have a good answer. Yitzchak wouldn't have a good answer, but somehow with all the answers, there was a Rechuk there that was not justified. And Amalek comes out of that relationship. And from Amalek, do we have to belabor what Amalek has done throughout history to Klal Yisrael? When you talk about how the Gemara focuses on the father of the religion that we read about so much this morning, Christianity, that how much bloodshed has been spilled in the name of Christianity, and the father of that religion, who again the Gemara tells us, Rishul of Prachia, they're at an inn, and Rishul of Prachia makes a comment about how nice the innkeeper was, and Yoshka answers back, Yeshua answers back, I don't think she looks so nice. I mean, her smile really isn't so pretty. And you think I was talking about her physical appearance? I was talking about her midos. What kind of person are you? This is where your mind goes? I'm talking about her midos. I'm talking about her chen. You're talking about her physicality. And he put him in the chayrim. And he excommunicated him. And this is a Gemara telling us this. And when he comes back to ask him for mechila, he was in Shema, and he couldn't interrupt. And at the end of the day, because he could not get back into the good grace of Yeshua and Prachya, we have Christianity. And there are many other stories like this. And these are people who clearly were not high-level people. These are people clearly who had deficiencies. But apparently the idea of Avas Yisrael, we have to, in a way, the place where we really need to start is a place where it's not happening. If we have to, in a way, start at a place where is there a relationship that I have right now which is not so great? Well, right now there is a little bit, and it's not about blame, because these are people, we would have every excuse to talk about these people. And I mean, and I'm just picking two there. We could pick five, we could pick ten. We have so many other cases throughout history where Rechuk resulted in such devastation. And this is justifiable. Kamsa by Kamsa. The story of the Churban Bayis. How did Bar Kamsa get to the point where he's ready? Anybody's ready to go to the government, to the Roman officials, to cause the destruction and the eradication of the Jewish people. What kind of Russia? This person, I mean, could you get lower than that? And yet, it's called Sinas Chinam. I found that strange. It's interesting. Sinas Chinam, because of Sinas Chinam. And the Mashal says, right in the Gemara Gittin, that the word there in Gittin doesn't use the expression Sinas Chinam. It's different. Gemara says, because of Sinas Chinam, the Churban happened. But the Mashal says right there in the Sinas Chinam. And it made me realize, what is Sinas Chinam? Who's this Sinas Chinam? Maybe this fellow had every right. We have a long feud, a long history. I've hated you, you've hated me. You're at my party, get out of here. They want me to be a tzaddik, but why are you calling that Sinas Chinam? But he calls Sinas Chinam, and it just struck me. It also struck me that the expression, I know nowadays we'll hear Avas Chinam a lot. People love balancing out Sinas Chinam, Avas Chinam. I didn't do the research. I don't have the computer skills to do a computer. But I really want to do a computer. Maybe somebody here, I'm sure many people here have that skill, to do a search on Avas, the expression Avas Chinam in Chazal. I don't think you'll find it too often. I really don't think you'll find it. We use it now, but Sinas Chinam you'll find all over. Avas Chinam, I don't think you'll find too often. And it struck me, the answer is Pasha, I think. I mean, again, we can do the research and find otherwise, but the answer is Pasha. Sinas chinam, sinna is defined as sinas chinam. It's not a type of hatred. Hatred is sinas chinam. Because when you were talking about another Jew, that's chinam. What are you hating? There are rare cases, 1 in 1,000, where the Gemara talks about we have a right to hate a Jew. If you witness firsthand a Jew do a horrific avera, which cannot be justified under any conditions, even though you can't talk about him, you can personally hate the person, in the individual. That's non-sinas. Every other case, the way he talks, the way he chews, the way he speaks, the way he makes a bracha, the way she does this, the way that. I mean, but come on, I have a right. Don't I have a right to have my emotions? And I want to stay away. Apparently not. I mean, staying away, maybe you don't want to test yourself. That's a different issue. But sinna is sinna schina. The hatred of another Jew is defined as sinna schina. And I think that's why you'll never find Avas Chinam as an expression, at least not on a general level, because Avas Yisrael is not Chinam. Every Ava is justifiable. You're a Jew. If you're a Jew, I can't hate you, and if I do, it's Sinas Chinam, because find a way not to hate. How could you hate? What shach? I can't stand you. Get away from me. I'm going to talk about you. I'm going to destroy you. The whole thing is just, it's bizarre. Chazal say it's Chinam. It's ridiculous. It's baseless. Ava, baseless? It's not Ava. Baseless. You're a Jew. You're a Tzelem Elokim. I love you. I have to love you. By definition. And if we realized how devastating that absence of love could be, how if we somehow communicate less than that, and yes, richuk, richuk is maybe a harsh word, but you know what? To some people, not richuk is not, doesn't have to come with a big bang or a big punch in the nose or something very, very blatant. Sometimes it could just be the sense that, well, you know, I've heard this from kids very often. In particular, girls have told me over the years, they walk into certain places and they feel they're looked up at. They feel, what are you doing here? Because I'm just not like you. I'm not the same. So what are you doing here? You don't dress like us. You don't look like us. That's richuk. I don't know if it was an intended richuk, but if she feels a richuk. And when you talk about kids at risk, that's what they're feeling. I mean, we read the Parsha Devarim. We just read it. Moshe Rabbeinu gives to Chocha at the end of his life. He learns that from Yaakov, because Yaakov gave rebuke at the end of his life. So did Moshe. He didn't do it earlier. Why didn't? Why did he do it? Because Yaakov didn't. Why didn't Yaakov do it earlier? And Rashi says an incredible statement. What an incredible statement! Make us all tremble. He says Yaakov waited because if he would have given Tochacha to Reuven earlier, had he not waited to the very end of his life, on his deathbed, when it was clear, these are my parting words, Reuven, these are my parting words. With this I will leave this earth and you'll have these words to ponder. Had he waited, what? He waited 5 years before, 10 years before. What? He's Yaakov Avinu, he's Reuven, he's a Bechor, he can handle, right? Says Rashi, I'm afraid he's going to run off to Esav and join Esav. Reuven's going to join Esav. From a little tochacha, and who gives tochacha? The Chafetz Chaim tells us when you give rebuke, there are two types of rebuke. There's rebuke while it's happening, you have to stop a Jew from doing an aver. At least even then, you have to do it in the right way. But you have to. That's one type of rebuke. This is a different type. This is not rebuke at the time of the aver. This is a rebuke more of a global tochacha of who you are and where think you need to go. But it would be delivered with such love by Yaakov Avinu to his son Reuven. Say, Pachas Kamayim Al Tosar, you know, you're a little impetuous, you're a little bit, you know, you're quick to the jaw. You know, I understand you had good intentions when you moved my bed, but he would have done it in such a nice way. But says, Yaakov, I'm waiting. I'm waiting because even a Reuven could hook up with an Esav? These are mind-boggling concepts, but this is the reality. We see it every single day. I have kids. Baruch Hashem. I mean, the schuss that I've seen in terms of amazing, amazing young men and young ladies becoming just unbelievable leaders, and just what they're able to overcome and their own personal challenges. To me, has been just such a schuss to see this over 2 decades. But I got to tell you, the hurt of some of these kids. They're so sensitive. Some kids have nothing to do with Yiddishkeit, not because of anything that happened to them. Some kids told me, I don't want to be firm because of what I saw, something happened to somebody else, because the Rebbe spoke to my classmate this way. And he was barachic, my classmate, by telling him, you'll never amount to anything. You'll never be, you sit in the back, you can't look at Gemara, just sit in the back and just vegetate back there. Forget about what it does to the kid. What it does what it does to somebody looking at him can even be unbelievably devastating. And this is, again, it's dramatic. I'm picking maybe dramatic cases, but these things unfortunately happen. What I'm saying is, if we begin to realize that my view of the world and my embracing of Klal Yisrael in its totality, completely, not judgment, not judging, not deciding who you are, where you're from. Let me give you the up and down first. Let me first check you out in terms of where you go to school. Okay, now I can sort of. Remember, many years ago, my father, Avos Shalom, we were walking back from a shul in Kew Gardens. Must have been in the 70s. There was a woman in front of one of the shuls, a big crowd. We walked over there, and this woman had a story, one of these crazy stories, and had no money, went to an airport with a missing plane, no luggage, and one of these stories, right away, you jump to the conclusion, there's something going on here. Something's not kosher here. And it was so interesting for me to see the contrast of my father, a survivor, an European, whose attitude is, if you said I need help, you ask questions later. You need to be taken out. Yeah. His attitude was, this woman's got to come home. We got to take care of her. Now, I'm not judging it. Somebody who said, I don't want to do that in today's world, it's pretty crazy. It's so sad that we have to sit there and what's going to be? What is she really? What is he really? You're right. We're living in a crazy world. So I'm not saying what the Pesach Halach is. Ask a Rav what to do in those situations. But it's just a natural emotion that we have before we look at somebody to think if we're starting to put the person in this box or that box and checking them out, there can be no room for rechuk. And I think when we start realizing that even the lack of embracing is ultimately a rechuk on one level or another, we realize how devastating that is. It becomes so compelling for us to develop this ava, to work on this ava, to see the world in a different way, to realize this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. It's so amazing. I mean, you think about Midos. I don't know what happened. Maybe once I'm up here, I'm going to be a little bit on my soapbox. I'm just going to take a 2 minute. But I don't know where it happened. I don't know where it happened in Klal Yisrael that the Adam Lamakom, that's the core. That's the essential part. That's really what, that's the nitty gritty. The Adam Lachavero, that's real nice. It's really nice, that's like beautiful icing on the cake. I'm not sure what happened. But somewhere in the system, it seems in my mind, what I'm seeing is that what the communication of the Mesorah to our children on the level of the Makom, Averos, Mitzvot that pertain between man and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's non-negotiable, that's it. That cannot be in any way altered, maneuvered, compromised any which way. But Olam HaVeiro, that's where, it's nice. And I mean, this is what I sense. And I don't know where it came from. Because when you look at Chazal, you look at history, the devastation comes more from the Olam HaVeiro than Olam HaMakom. The Olam HaMakom is easy to do tshuva for the Olam HaMakom. But Olam HaVeiro, you're going to track down every single person you spoke Hashara about? You're going to track down every single person you once gave the wrong look? It's impossible. And nice you see. We see from looking at Chazal, in scoping Jewish history, the devastation, the calamities that befell Klal Yisrael were much greater when they connected to the issue of Olam HaVeiro between one Jew and another Jew, as opposed to between Jew and God. So clearly, any attempt to say that to Baruch Hu, I love you, but I don't, your children, I'm not so sure about. Can you imagine, I've said it before, can you imagine going over to somebody, to a parent, saying, I love you, Mr. Schwartz, Mr. Friedman, I love you so much. I just want you to know, last night I saw your son, I kicked him in the stomach, I punched him in the nose, and I broke his foot. But I love you so much. Take a walk, what are you, weird, get out of here, I do love you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said the same thing, you love me? You talk to me about love and you shuckle away with 1,000 miles an hour. It's gevaldik. I'm shuckling away. I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu so much. I'll do his mitzvahs. I'll do every chumrah in the book. I'll take every mitzvah and I'll find the chazan and shishir and the brisket sheet on every mitzvah in the book. But I'm like, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, what are you doing? What are you doing? Well, you think you're impressing me with your bedol lemakom when you haven't taken care of my children? My children, you're ready to ignore. My children, you're not ready to focus in on. My children, you're ready to step on or not step on Chas V'Shalom, but just a little negative look, a little like, what are you doing here? A little, this shul is, not for you, or this school is not for you, or this community is not for you. this is what's happening some in some annals in some places, and it's deficit. So I think we have to, when we, I think, to begin to realize the devastation and to realize if this is what happens, so I have to look at every Jew differently. I have to see every Jew as a Semel Kim, the way our Chazal mandated us, the way the Torah mandates us, the way our Tzadikim and Tzadikanios did. They looked at every Jew in a unique way. We had a Rebbe, Baruch Hashem, Rebbe Samazar, we was Zochet to have a Rebbe. He looked at a Jew, no matter where he went, he saw the unique quality of the Yiddish Neshama. And that's just permeated his very being. There was not a judgmental bone in his body. I don't think there was a judgmental chromosome in his being. A Yid, you got to do what you can. If a Jew needs our help, you got to do what you can. It's a Yid. I don't care what, where, denominations, this affiliation. I don't care. But there's even actually a prerequisite to that. There's an amazing pshat I saw after Acha Kamocha. We all know the pasuk: love a fellow Jew like yourself. What's this kamocha business? Kamocha? Do I need to have it? Love your fellow Jew. What a kamocha? What's this? What, you're limiting the love? Yeah, only like yourself? You can't love your fellow Jew more than yourself? And I saw a pshat that in today's world is a critical pshat. It's mamish, it rings so true. And one of the Mefarshim says, you can't love a fellow Jew if you don't love yourself. It's kamocha because that's a prerequisite. You have to know who you are first. You have to have a sense of your greatness, your inner potential, your unique ability to contribute to Klal Yisrael. If you don't have a sense of self-worth, which in today's world, again, is such a rare commodity. If you ask me, you know, again, just from my position where I am dealing with teenagers, if you ask me what's the number one issue that confronting teenagers today, on a personal level, it's self-esteem. It's for some reason, I don't know what happened, I don't know if it's in the water, maybe the doctors, they can tell us what's going on, but somehow, what was taken for granted 50, 60, 70 years ago today, I don't know, for a kid to feel like they can do anything, I don't know where it comes from. I can't do this, I can't do that, and then all these disorders, all these craziness, it comes from. I need affirmation, I need to feel that I'm worthy. Well, you need to feel you're worthy? You're an amazing person. Look at you. You're 15 years old. You have everything in front of you. You have a Yiddish neshama. You have amazing qualities. You feel inadequate. Somehow we're not giving over the sense of how worthy each and every one of us is. Bishvili nivrolam. The sense of self-esteem is so critical because if we are, in a sense, facing every single day with a sense of apathy or a sense of just dreading the day because somehow I'm not good enough and I can't accomplish, and I can't do what I need to do. Then that's a problem because the Eitzar has got us to that point. We are absolutely entrenched in the clutches of the evil inclination and we're done for. So first and foremost, we have to get back. You know, again, we've been very blessed. We come from and I consider probably everyone here a Talmud of the Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva because you've been visited so often by the Yeshiva Zatzal over the years. Your manig, your wonderful leader is a Talmud, a star Talmud of the Rosh Yeshiva, and you are given over on a regular basis that sense of importance, of self-worth. That's what Yeshiva in giving us over this sabbatka view of Musar. The idea of godless Adam, of what each and every Jew represents. And that's why he saw the world the way he did the Rosh Yeshiva, because he realized, I don't care if the Jews are in Phoenix, or Jews are in Tucson, or they're in Vancouver, and they're in Dallas, or in the Valley, or it doesn't make a difference where they are, or Pico Robertson. A Jew is a Jew, they will give it a unique neshama, and when you touch that neshama with Torah, and with love, and with truth, it will resonate. It will shine, and it will flower, and it will rise to very high levels. We have to start with our own neshama. It's got to start right here. We have to believe in what Chazal told us about Bishvili Nivrom. Yes, if we were the only person on earth, this amazing galaxy, in its vast, limitless levels of brilliance, and I mean, what can you say? Well, can you try to figure this world out? I mean, what the scientists are right now, how far are they scratched the first level of knowledge? This, and how much more is there? And we know from Torah, I mean, how if we lived a million lifetimes, we wouldn't scratch the surface, and it all would have been worth it for one person. If everybody else would disappear, just one of us, any person sitting in this room would be here, the only person on earth. It'd be worth it for that person to be here. Yeah, you're worthy of all the galaxies, and all the constellations, all the universe, the whole universe. It's all because of one person. And this has to be driven home. This has to be instilled within us. These are things we have to work on. And certainly Musar is so important. People think Musar knocks us down. Musar should not be knocking us down. Yeah, it can maybe help us realize we were doing something wrong. But the purpose of Musar is to build us up. It's to realize, I've got an important job to do. I've got things to do. I've got worlds to make. I've got lives to change. I've got to build Kiddush Hashem. I've got to create Kiddush Shemayim in this world. So I've got a lot of work to do. I start on my work every single day with a good morning, with a smile. I don't care what we do. The Rashi would always tell us, every person's a Marbet Torah. There's nobody's not a Marbet Torah. We spread Torah no matter what we do. No matter what job we have, the way we conduct ourselves, the way we hold ourselves, the way we talk to people. We're a Marbet Torah. We spread Torah everywhere we go. So we surely have to have that sense of the kamocha. The achteracha kamocha. The Torah is telling you, you got to love yourself first. You got to have that sense of who you are. And to work on godless others, to look at the Moses form, to look at the Arat Sofer, to read a little bit from the Altar of Sabbat, to start imagining what it is that to have a chelik elakayim out. V'yipach b'apah HaKadosh Baruch Hu literally blew into us an aspect of himself. When you blow into a balloon, I don't know too many quotes from the Zohar, but one quote I know from the Zohar, Mad nafach, midilei nafach. When you blow into something, what do you blow into? You're blowing up yourself. You have your own air, and you're blowing the air into the balloon. So what's in the balloon? Part of you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yipach B'Avav blew into us, in essence, part of himself. So we have godliness within us, no matter what we try to do, no matter how many mud piles we can run into, it will never ever cover up and erase that. We can try to cover it up, but it'll never eradicate the chelik elokayim out. The godliness within us can never be removed. That's why when Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah comes and we're not so far away and we want to whiten ourselves, it's relatively easy because it's there. It's like taking a shower and just wiping the mud off and the dirt, and right away we're back to, because we are pristine. Our inner core is pristine. That's a very critical aspect. Once we have that sense of who we are, well then everybody else takes on so much more importance. If we're nothing, why should anybody else be something? I'm nothing, and I will nothing. So you step on me, I step on you. It's okay. It's one self-effacing, lack of self-esteem convention. Chas v'shalom. Okay, I love myself. I realize my self-worth. I gotta love you because I know your worth. You can change the world. You're special. You're holy. You can make such an amazing contribution. I gotta love you. And when we don't feel that, there's a very simple formula. The building block, the ultimate building block, and this is the day-to-day grind that we have to go through. And you've heard, I'm sure, many times over the course of different shurim and shruzim that you hear, but we know that ahava, love, v'after acha kamocha, comes from the word hav. You've heard it many times. It's about giving. And it's not just about, it's a beautiful thing, I love you, I give you. Yes, that's the essence of life. But we need to know something even a little bit deeper than that. That the way to develop that love is through giving. The Gemara gives a very fascinating scenario. Two times in Shas. The Gemara Bava Metzia talks about the Gemara talks about a scenario. A scenario where you have your friend coming down one side of Pico and somebody you hate coming down the other side of Pico. And your friend is unloading his camel, and the camel's got a nice, or donkey got a nice big load. Let's make it more American, right? So it's a donkey, and it's got a nice big load. So, and we're in California, so we have to recognize, of course, the pain to the animal, because we know that, of course, Torah does recognize and is concerned for the pain of an animal. So here you've got my friend who is waiting to unload. He needs help. His poor donkey's got this big load waiting in 110 degree heat, okay, to unload. And on the other side of the street is a guy I can't stand. Just, I don't know what it is. From the first time I bumped into him, maybe the first time that he took that piece of potato kugel during the kiddush that I wanted. I'm not sure what it was, but I don't know. I just haven't liked this guy from day one. And he's on the other side of the street, and he's loading up his donkey. And the Torah says you got to help the one unloading, you got to help the one loading. Here I got a conflict. And I've got Tzar Baal HaChayim to add into the equation too. Tzar Baal HaChayim, because I've got this poor animal also suffering. And he's my friend. And he's my enemy. I can't stand him. What do I do? The Torah tells you very clearly what to do. Even though Tzar Baal HaChayim, and even if Tzar Baal HaChayim was the Reis, which is itself a big discussion in the Gemara, is the issue of pain to an animal a Torah issue or is it a rabbinic issue? Even if it's a Torah issue, which means the Torah says you cannot allow an animal to feel pain and to be caused pain, you got to be concerned for an animal. Nevertheless, that's right. Go to the other side of Pico, help the person you can't stand. Why? So two amazing lessons from this Gemara. The Gemara says, Lachuf es yitzroi adav. You've got to lachuf. You've got to suppress your hate. You've got to push it down, and you've got to work on yourself. You can't accept the fact that you can't stand this person. That's not a place to be. That's what you call, that's sinas chinam, right? That is by definition, based on what we said before, is by definition sinas chinam, because at the end of the day, since he doesn't meet the threshold of those rare Jews, that in today's world, probably one in a million, not even one in a 10,000. In today's world, the Chazon Ish says anybody who doesn't keep Torah Kamat is a tidik shenishba. So if you see Jews doing terrible averis, how much do they know? How much have they learned? So who can you really hate anymore? And it had repercussions in Hilchos Lashon Hara too. Who can you speak about? The Chavos Chaim writes about speaking about an apikoros. Are there really any heretics today? Who's a true heretic today? I mean, who really went through the Torah to know, I'm rejecting the Torah? Most people don't know. The guy sitting in the back of Temple Isaiah knows what he's rejecting. He doesn't know. Nebuch, it's a Nebuch. You can't view that person as being a Russia. So who's left today? I don't know who's left. But certainly this fellow on Pico is no Russian. I don't like him. He runs me the wrong way. We've had a few little incidences, but he's no Russian. So that it's not acceptable that we can't stand him. And the Torah says it's so unacceptable that forget about the animal's pain. Forget about your best buddy who now might be wondering why you're helping the guy I know you can't stand. You're not helping me. Maybe now you'll have a new enemy. I don't know. It's a different issue. Yeah, okay, but you got to help. You got to help your friend. You got to help the guy. Hopefully he'll become your friend. But what's amazing, not only do you see the importance and the unacceptability within the framework of halacha to hate another Jew or to dislike another Jew, but what you see is maybe something even more profound here. The way to work on yourself, what is that going to be like? Right? If you talk to the mental health professionals in today's world, you don't want to create dissidence within you if you're going to start doing things you don't really want to do. You don't like the person, stay away, just ignore the person. No. Torah says, Lochuf es yitzroi adav. Push it. Push the envelope, invest in that person, help that person, because by helping that person, actually that will change your mentality. The greatest love that exists in the world today, we all know, is the love between a parent and a child. And maybe, I don't get into it, but I would imagine the mother to a child, if you go with this calculation, is actually greater than a father to a child in most cases. Because if the Chovos HaOmos calculation, if you go by that calculation, which of course is correct, the place where you invest the most, the place where you give the most to, is the place where you're going to love the most. So who gives more than a mother to a child? Who gives more those sleepless nights and all of the anguish of the carrying of the child and the pain of the childbirth and the rearing of the child and the nursing and the sleepless nights and the diapers and everything else and then the concerns over schooling and then raising the kid and then the teenage years and you name it. I mean, my gosh, by the time the kid gets to be 20, the love is just, it's beyond words. Because I've got everything in here. I've got everything in my life is invested in this child. There's nothing I would think twice about running in front of a bus. A child cannot believe. It's interesting. Most kids cannot believe that a parent would actually run in front of a bus to save their child. To a parent, it's like a reflex action that they wouldn't even think about. Take me, save my child. That was a no-brainer issue. Rachman Litzan in the Holocaust. How many parents are willing to do that if they're able to do it? But kids can't. They can't relate to it because they don't see it that way because they don't have the same relationship towards a parent that we have, of course, to a child. But you have to invest. You have to work. You have to give. And that's the key element. When we become givers, especially to places, and again, we have to look at it. We have to really take a good cheshbon nefesh. Where are our difficult. We're all good people, and we're all giving people. There's no question. I mean, my gosh, I'm talking mamash to the elite of Klal Yisrael. So really, what can I say? I'm talking to myself. But so what can I say to myself? I can say there must be. There's got to be areas, and there are. There are. That's a person maybe I try to avoid. That's a person who maybe if there was a favor, let somebody else do it. Let somebody else, do that, give that person some help or write out that check or whatever it might be. But if it really, it's not something that really I feel good about, well, maybe that's exactly where the challenge lies. It's not something I'm longing to do. I'm not excited about doing it. It causes me a little bit of angst because this is not really my favorite person. Well, you know what? That should be a great challenge. Maybe don't make him your or her your favorite person, but build it up a little bit. You know what? Dafka. What can I do? I heard you got married. Mazel tov. I'd love to help out a shadow brachas. You know, it might be somebody you never would have offered it to. But you know, we always offer the closest, but I would love to make shadow brachas with you. It would be so much fun. Well, yeah, I'm not saying don't do it. But if it's so much fun, then maybe, you know, that's great. But maybe make it when it's not so much fun. Maybe make it when it's a little bit uncomfortable. Where you got to push yourself a little bit. Where it's exactly lochuf es yitzray. That unbelievable concept that the Gemara tells us, the idea of forcing the issue, where it's not so easy. And Chazal is telling us, you give and you love, you'll develop love. You go through the motions of giving. Obviously, you can't go back home and regret it that you ever did it. That's not a good level. But you'll feel good about it. You won't regret it. You'll feel good about it. And you'll realize, my gosh, that person's not so bad. One of the things that I've used over the course of time, when I have somebody who I find as a child, I try to picture that person going home to their mother. And everybody to their mother is a bubble. So all I got to do is work on me looking at a person like that person's mother looks at that person. Because, come home, you're so sweet, I love you, I see all your virtues, right? We're very discerning with somebody else's shortcomings. You know, we're great at our virtues, and not so great sometimes with somebody else's virtues. But to a mother, to a child, my son can do no wrong. My little girl can do no wrong. She's an angel. You're right. I don't see it that way right now, but you're right. So you know what? Let me try to get into her mind frame. What does she see that makes her such a beautiful little angel? You know what? And I'll start working on that. Then I can start seeing it that way. And through giving, and through redirecting ourselves, this is critical. Because everywhere, God forbid, with this richuk, rachman and son, where there's an absence of this embracing attitude that Klai Yisrael needs to have, that's where the problems lie. That's where they are out there. We can interview them one after one. Baruch Hashem, I think, as kids at risk go, or kids at richuk go, we're doing pretty well. But we have them. They are here, and they become adults, and they're probably adults already in their 20s and 30s who are in that situation, who they don't feel comfortable, they don't feel happy. We don't know how far they've gone, but there's a lot of anger, a lot of hurt, a lot of pain inside. But surely we walk the streets of the East Coast and some of the big cities. It's horrific what's happening. And what has to happen is we have to be educating from the ground floor, from the first step up, this idea of this universal view of the Jew. We've got to, I know it sounds a little scary, but we can't start saying, hey, when you tell, you know, some people ask about certain, you know, even a Beis Medrash, you ask about, you know, the different conflicts sometimes in Jewish people, in different groups, in different sects, and they start, you know, asking me questions, and I say, I'm not going there. Yeah, maybe are there people doing something wrong? Or maybe we disagree with certain ways of conducting a certain group within Klal Yisrael? Maybe. But I'm not going there because to start focusing on that right now is only going to allow a person's mind to go, oh, there's another Jew I can say, he's not doing it right. She's not doing it right. They're making mistakes. They're this and they're that. You know what? We got enough of that. We can't possibly, we're not on a level to internalize a difference in a way where we're going to come out enhanced by it. When we hear differences, when we hear you can't do this, you don't talk to that, you can't play one, and you can't go there, rules we have to have. But somehow we have to communicate that universal view of the Jew, that a Jew is a person you love. That's the automatic response. You love the Jew. You create guidelines for yourself, you create rules for yourself, you do certain things, you can't do other things. Absolutely. But the general immediate attitude has got to be that I love another Jew. And that's what we have to communicate. And that's what the Torah demands. I'll leave you with two Chazal and then one beautiful Kalbach story. And just to drive home this point, that this is not something that's coming from anybody but Chazal. The Ramban says on the Pasuk of Orash, Le'okim Divrei Torah Zos, we have this serious Pasuk, cursed be the one who does not uphold this Torah, Pasuk in Kisavo. And the Ramban says, he quotes Yerushalmi, what's he referring to? And his words are that you can have a person who's etzadigam, I prepared it beforehand just so I can lose it right when I need it. He says, Beisamelech Vanasi, the leadership of Klal Yisrael, they have the ability to uphold Torah and to build up Torah in those who are not learning it. V'afilu, hayu etzadigam, Listen to the words of Ramban, incredible words. Even if this person was, I mean, think about what that means. For Ramban to say something, somebody's a tzaddik gomor, that's a serious Jew. That's a very serious Jew. That's somebody who's got a down pat, knows Dalad Chalke Shulchan Aruch, knows all the Sifris, knows all the Tosefta. He's a tzaddik gomor. That's not a loose word that the Ramban would use, or the Yerushalmi would use. He was a tzaddik gomor b'maisav. In his actions, he was perfect. But he had the ability to uplift those Rishoyim, not fellow tzaddikim, not in between Jews, Rishoyim. He calls them Rishoyim, who are not following the Torah. But I had an opportunity. I found an opening. I could have done something. I could have said a nice word. I could have maybe invited the person over to my house. We could have had a cup of coffee at the coffee bean together. Something could have happened. I had an opportunity. It was right there for the taking. And the person, the leader, the potential mashpia, the one who has the ability to influence, didn't take advantage, harizah orer. Such a person, chas v'shalom, is in this category of being cursed. Rachmal atzlan. And the Das HaKenim also says in Emor, in the Pasuk, when we talk about taking the Dalad Minim, what a beautiful chazal, the Das HaKenim quotes a Medrash, and he says that we take the four minim, many allusions to what the four minim represent. But he has a pshat that the four minim represent four different types of Jews. And the fourth Jew, the Esrog, is the top of the line Jew. He's got Torah, he's got Midos, he's got Mitzvot, he's got it all. The Arava, I guess Arava is the least expensive even nowadays. Arava is the cheapest one, right? So the Arava is not in the man, right? And it represents a Jew who's got no Reach HaTorah, no Mitzvot, empty. He's an empty receptacle with nothing in there except that amazing Yiddish neshama that somehow, when sparked properly, could fly to the highest echelon. We don't have time to talk about that, but that's an amazing shmuz in its own right, just that concept of what a person could do in a matter of seconds. But he says, you have the ability. He says you have to take these four, says the Das HaKenim. You take these four and you bring them together. Why? To teach us. Remez, Shein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Misrat Til Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not ultimately give us a thumbs up. It's not. We're not getting that thumbs up yet. Ad Shiyukulam LaGuda Achas. Until, and this is, I don't think it's a plug for Aguda, as opposed to any other organization. I think it's a plug for Aguda Achas. One unit. Till we're not getting the thumbs up from HaKadosh Baruch Hu until we make ourselves into one unit, because of Pasuk, and he says, and that's why Vinir Lishokachano Oim Rosh Hashanah V'yosu Kul Magud Achas. We take the four meaning and we shake them in one unit on Sukkot. What a beautiful yontif, Chag Simcha Seinu. The concept is through that Simcha, through the Chag Asif, we've got our money, we've got our harvest, everything is good. We're dancing in the Sukkot. We're dancing on Simcha's Torah. We've got to have that one unit. We've got to have that one, just one dimension to us, that we just get along. We just like each other. We just love each other. We just seem to help each other. And there are different. Listen, no one is saying embrace the Russia and adopt his lifestyle. No, the Ramban wasn't telling us to adopt the Chas V'Shalom, but embrace the Russia, because by embracing the Russia, we can change the Russia. And that Russia, especially in today's world, there is such a quick step from that Russia becoming a tzaddik, it's not even funny. How much have we seen that? And how much certainly does a shul like this see, and based on the unique mitzvot, the unique chassadim of a shul like this, how many amazing stories have we seen of people who have not had the privilege of knowing what Torah is about, yet given a spark, coming to an inviting place, say, come on in, sit down, we'll teach you Torah, we'll have you at our meal. We see what happens. And this is an incredible thing, and this has to permeate all of Klal Yisrael. I'll just end with just shorten the story up. It's a beautiful story. It just shows us that when we do amazing things, and we just are nice to people, we can somehow and very often involve ourselves in some amazing hashgacha pratos. And I recently read this story about Rabbi Shlomo Kalbach, who was was on a plane once, and he mentioned this recently in somebody's home. But I'll say, because I think it's a moving story. And he noticed that the stewardess on the plane was extremely kind, very, very nice. And he's, I'm going to go to the back of the plane, I'm going to give her a nice word, saying that I've seen many stewardesses, but like the Shulman Prachi story, very special in your midos. And he's about to go back to, he's going to the back of the plane to acknowledge how unique she was as a, and then she, we don't use stewardess now, it's a flight attendant, sorry, flight attendant. So he's going to say to the flight attendant how helpful you are, and you're just really such a wonderful person. He was shocked. He noticed that she was davening on the plane. She was diving in the back of the plane. We thought it's only for the people in Al-Al, you know, but no, she was diving in the back of the plane. When was the last time anybody saw a flight attendant davening? I can't remember it. So he waits for her to finish davening, and he says, I can't believe it. You're Jewish? I mean, you know, tell me, my tire and the shovel, like, what's your story? This is incredible. And she tells her whole story, and oh, Rabbi, you know, I converted, and I was inspired to Judaism, and I love Judaism, but I have a real problem. What's my problem? I have a fiancé, we love each other, but my fiancé's father is a survivor, and he adamantly says, under no conditions can my son marry a convert. In my mind, a convert is the same as a non-Jew. I don't consider conversions. It's got to be Jewish my blood. And even though I personally am not religious now, I'm a survivor, and I've disavowed any connection to religiosity, but that's my last stance. My son's got to marry a Jew. Can you help me? I'll try to help you. Gets off the plane, takes the number, says, I'll call you, and I'll try. He calls the father of the chassan, or the hopeful chassan, and says, I'm Rabbi Kalbach, I just want to talk to you. I met your son's wonderful friend on the plane, and she's such a, why are you mixing in? Get out of my life. I want nothing to do with you. The chutzpah, you have to call me. You shouldn't be mixing into people's lives. And he hung up on it. Okay. He's got to return the message, the negative message that I tried, it wasn't successful. Calls up the girl, the flight attendant. She wasn't home. Her father picks up the phone. He thinks he's talking to a Gentile. And he says, you know, this is Rabbi Kalbach. Just if you can give your daughter a message, I tried. I tried helping her out because she's in love with this young man, and I tried to talk to the young man's parents, but the father said, absolutely not. Why are you mixing in? Her father starts yelling at her. Why are you mixing in? Stay out of our business. Mind your own business. What are you doing? And he starts lambasting her, and Kabul starts getting apologetic. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to butt into anybody's business, but your daughter asked me, and I'm just trying to help out, you know, God makes you do chumul day. I'm just trying to give him a little hand here and just trying to get it going. And I'm sorry. And somehow, he was being nice on the phone, as he was being nice on the plane. And all of a sudden, there was a break in the conversation. And the father says, I feel I can talk to you. I've never told this to anybody since World War II. But my wife and I are Jewish. But we were so angry at God about what happened that we decided we're going to raise our daughter Christian. But we are Jewish. So Rabbi Kalbach says, wait a minute. If you're really Jewish, and they're really Jewish, you've got no reason not to have a shidduch here. So you know what? I think we can make this thing happen. So why don't you meet us? And he made the arrangements. You're going to come to this place. The parents of the boy are going to be there. And we're going to get this thing done. He said, okay. He actually agreed. Shows up this day. Goes into, knocks on the door. The father of the chassan is waiting there. He opens the door. The father of the girl walks in. Look at each other. They both almost faint. Chaim? Shmuel? They fall in each other's arms and they start crying and crying and crying. These are two people. Think about the odds of them getting together. Then think about the odds of two people who are in a little town in Europe together, who are chavrusa in yeshiva together, who are so close that they made a pact with one another. And they said to our children, how do you get married to them? Because that's how close they are. And here's a man who goes over and does a nice thing to say, I think you're a very nice person. Thank you for your service. Something nice leads to such an incredible Ashkach HaPrat, such an incredible, I don't know the end of the story, what happened with them afterwards, and I guess it would have been really nice if we could say that they're all now with everybody's formula, but who knows, Bez Hashem. But what an incredible story. What an incredible, that itself, to get these two people together, to allow them to. This is what happens. When we do nice things, we will find HaKadosh Baruch Hu start sending chasadim our way, start sending bracha our way, start sending amazing Hashkacha Pratis our way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mezaka, ayidei zaka. So people are into helping the downtrodden, helping those who are maybe not the popular ones, maybe the ones who maybe not everyone else is jumping on the bandwagon to help. Those are the ones. Maybe somebody who truly does a little bit rub us the wrong way, because after all, they do chew a little funny. Or they're not Laker fans, they're Clipper fans. How can I be funny with a Clipper fan? My gosh, it's against my every principle. You know what? I guess I'm working myself. I have to start making friends with some Mets fans. That's what I have to do. We all got to work on our weaknesses. But if we can do that, and we must, at the end of the day, we must. This is the Osu Gulam Aguda Echos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's right there, Daz HaKeyim. In HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Misratza, in Yisrael, HaChiyosu, Kulam, Aguda Achas. In that Chus, in the Chus of a place which is really, the Shemu Teferis, Aguda Achas, Bez Hashem, the unique Aguda we find when we walk into this special shul, should Bez Hashem spread throughout all Chai Yisrael, and all of us can look at every Jew with such love and such reverence, such respect and such understanding, God, Kamocha, that I too, make my gift. I love myself, and if I can love everybody else. And if we realize, Bez Hashem, we can eradicate the richuk in the world and only work with kiruv, we're bringing people closer, and that's chos, Bez Hashem, we'll see the end of all suffering. Rizach Tavias from Meshach Meir.
I'm sure you all appreciated the wonderful words and tremendous Dear Chizuk of Rabbi Stolberger, and hopefully we'll be able to use those building blocks which he has just given us to Meretz Hashem build a beautiful edifice inside of our hearts, to love every Jew, and Meretz Hashem, as has been mentioned before in the videos, we will have the opportunity to build the Avas Yisrael, and Meretz Hashem will be Zocha, that this should truly be the last Tisha B'Av, and Meretz Hashem next year we'll have all these wonderful Shirim in a happy mode in Meretz Hashem. The next video is in 15 minutes.